The Fantasy 40s, Part 8, Books, Part 2, 1941 to 49. In the first months of the new year of 1941, James Joyce died of a perforated ulcer. 10 weeks later, Virginia Woolf threw herself into the Sussex Stream. At a cocktail party, Sherwood Anderson hastily swallowed an hors d'oeuvre and its accompanying toothpicks, which resulted in peritonitis and death. The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, America entered the war, and war books predominated the year's non-fiction bestseller list. In fact, World War II, like its predecessor World War I, temporarily shifted the public's reading taste from fiction to fact. Topping the list for the bookstores and book club sales of 500,000 was newspaper correspondent William Shearer's Berlin Diary, providing an insider's look at one of the war's two enemies. Alasdair Miller's The White Cliffs, a long narrated poem by wartime England, struck the hearts of American readers, racking up record sales for a volume of poetry and becoming the basis for a hit popular song and a 1944 movie. The White Cliffs of Dover, starring Eileen Dunn, Alan Marshall, and a young Roddy McDowell. It was first brought to the attention of the American public in a dramatic radio broadcast reading by stage actress Lynn Fontaine. England's Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, published a book of his speeches, and it's titled Blood, Sweat, and Tears, reflected both the efforts to avert war and the toll the war in Europe had already taken. Americans in 1941 could not get enough war books. In fact, 7 of the year's top 10 were related in one way or another to the war. 1. You Can't Do Business with Hitler, which was number 6, explained why the war had been inevitable. 1942. In the first full year of the war, war books again dominated the nonfiction list, occupying 7 of the 10 spots. Global tensions were also reflected in novels such as John Steinbeck's The Moon Is Down, an uplifting tale of social decency defeating inhumane barbarity cast in the setting of Norway under German domination. War anxiety was also apparent in the public's sudden penchant for inspiration and religious reading. The Song of Bernadette by Fritz Werfel sold nearly 500,000 copies to become the number one fiction. The following year, it'd be a smash 20th Century Fox movie starring unknown 23-year-old Jennifer Jones as the young French peasant girl Bernadette Soubriose, who has a vision of the lady. Readers loved the book and viewers adored the film, with the New York Times panning it as tedious and repetitious. It goes in for dialectic discourse and will clutter and fatigue the average mind. Many average Hollywood minds voted it 12 Academy Award nominations, and it won 4. The Robe, a biblical story set at the time of Christ, soared to the annual number 7 spot in 1942 and then to number 1 in 43. It remained a bestseller in the 1945, never falling lower than number 5 on the publisher's weekly monthly list. Its author, Lloyd Douglas, use of the fanciful Christian-era slang amongst the apostles, quote, Peter has no polish, life wouldn't be worth a punched denarius, end of quote. The robe was something new as biblical stories go. The robe was, of course, Christ's cloak, and the novel described the conversion to Christianity and eventual martyrdom of the tribune Marcellus Gallio, who carried out the order to crucify Jesus. When the government put a wartime restriction on the use of paper, the thick tome was reprinted in a thinner volume, containing the full original text but smaller typeface and less white space. The 1953 film adaptation of the bestseller would star Richard Burton as Gallio, Gene Simmons as Diane, and Victor Mature as Demetrius. I love that film. It's a great film. It was the first movie in widescreen CinemaScope. Throughout America's involvement in the war, the sale of Bibles increased more than 25%. Nostalgically, the title The Last Time I Saw Paris, a glimpse of the city before the grimness of German occupation, also inspired a popular song of the same name. American readers turned by the tens of thousands to the book for Eliot Paul's sad reminiscence. It became a hit movie in the 50s. 1944. War books continue to dominate the nonfiction list. 3 vastly different novels had America's reading avidly. Kathleen Windsor, who set out to write a novel of British royalty in the 17th century by reading some 400 books on Restoration England and taking copious notes, after 5 years of effort, she produced a manuscript of approximately 2.5 million words in 971 pages when it was published by Macmillan in 1944. Weighing in at 2 pounds, Forever Amber, banned in Boston, dwelt on the bawdiness of the period, offering pages of tasteful sex, which accounted for its phenomenal sales of 1 million copies in less than a year. Macmillan saturated bookstores with 225,000 advance copies. The Boston ban eventually spread throughout the entire state of Massachusetts. The highly photogenic author, formerly a sports writer for California's Oakland Tribune and writer under her maiden name, was the wife of All-American football player Robert Herwig, though soon to become Mrs. Artie Shaw. Her racy tale has 16-year-old Amber, mistress of Lord Bruce Carleton, by whom she is pregnant, marry the repulsive Chanel, who runs off with her money. Thrown in the Newgate prison for debt, she meets a highwayman named Black Jack Millard, but their romance is cut short because of his appointment with the gallows. She goes on the stage, marries various other men, one of whom is an earl, which makes her a countess, and eventually gains favor in the court of Charles II. Windsor's erotic prose was all her own. Quote, "His shirts still carried that male smell of him," end of quote. The 1947 movie adaptation starring Linda Darnell as the quintessential flirt Amber was, after a private screening, condemned by the Catholic League of Decency. Francis Cardinal Spellman, Archbishop of New York, cautioned, quote, "Catholics may not see the movie with a safe conscience," end of quote, a quote that was to be read at all Sunday Masses throughout the Archdiocese. Director Arto Preminger recut the film in accordance with the Legion's suggestions, and an organization was grudgingly forced to rescind its condemnation. Quite different was Betty Smith's tender recollections of days past, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, a story of sensitive childhood published the previous year that was a number 3 in 1944. W. Somerset Maugham's The Razor's Edge, held number 5, is a wartime tale of a mystical man of action who is something of a combination of Christopher Isherwood and Lawrence of Arabia. Notable in 1944 nonfiction list was Margaret Landon's Anna and the King of Siam, number 8, the 19th century story of an English governess to the king's children became the basis for a movie and a musical entitled The King and I. 1945, the autobiographical The Egg and I by Betty MacDonald was number 8 in nonfiction in 1945, number 1 in 1946, and number 7 in 1947. It was an earthy, humorous tale of life on a western chicken ranch, insightfully illustrating the pros and cons of a city dweller's return to nature. Quote, "To the city people sitting snug and dry," wrote one reviewer, "Mrs. MacDonald's life in the woods comes as unadulterated fun," end of quote. The simple nature book apparently held great appeal for millions of war-weary Americans who kept it on the bestseller list for 3 years. It was made into a successful 1947 movie starring Claudette Colbert as Betty and Fred McMurray as her husband Bob. Betty MacDonald followed the success of Egg and I with The Plague and I, number 10, 1948. 1946, while Betty MacDonald remained top in nonfiction, Daphne du Maurier and Taylor Caldwell headed the fiction list with respectively The King's General, number 1, This Side of Innocence, number 2. In 7th place was The Arch of Triumph by Eric Maria Remarque, whose World War I novel All's Quiet on the Western Front was a 1929 bestseller. 1947, Laura Hobson's Gentleman's Agreement was number 3 in fiction. The war and Hitler's atrocities had heightened interest in the problems of race relations, especially involving Jews and Gentiles, the focus of Hobson's book, which sold more than 1 million copies. 1948, quote, "Incredibly beastly," attacked London Sunday Times. "No decent man could leave it about the house," end of quote. That harsh criticism was for the shocking four-letter word that peppered Norman Mailer's 700-odd-page wartime novel, The Naked and the Dead. Fellow author George Orwell deemed the work, Mailer's first, as, quote, "the only war novel of any distinction to appear hitherto," end of quote. And the book established the author as a new force in American literature. Selling 137,185 copies, the realistic novel of how war brutalizes ordinary men. Another first novelist on the bestseller list was Ross Lockbridge, who committed suicide not long after his Raintree County achieved critical and popular success. The American War Tale became a successful 1957 movie starring Montgomery Clift, Eva Marie Saint, and Elizabeth Taylor, whose portrayal of Clift's ditzy Southern belle wife won her an Oscar. Yet another first novelist to make the bestseller list in 1948 was playwright and short story writer Irwin Shaw. His Young Lions, a lengthy wartime tale that depicts its characters, American and German, in peace and in conflict, in Paris, in New York, on the slopes of Austria, and in Nazi concentration camps, enjoyed sales of 78,050 books that year. The nonfiction list was notable for sex researcher A.C. Kinsey's Moral-Shaking Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, number 4. It either titillated or incensed readers with its startling findings. 85% of all married men had had premarital sex. 50% of married men are unfaithful to their wives. Semi-skilled laborers are the most sexually active group of males, with professional men ranking second. Day laborers third. White-collar workers limp in last. If wives wanted to believe that Kinsey exaggerated the figures about married men's infidelity, semi-skilled laborers certainly wish the findings about them were true. But of all the aforementioned books of the 40s, perhaps none had a greater influence on more people than A Common Sense, How to Bring Up Baby by little-known Dr. Spock. And I've already talked about that particular book. So that takes care of the books. Now the sources for this, or the source, Penati's Parade of Fads, Follies, and Manias, The Origins of Our Most Cherished Obsessions by Charles Penati. Hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.